Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, Andy Hirsch and Beth Weigel will give us a library update. We'll find out about the Hospice and Home Care Fun Run. We'll get details on First Friday at the Juno Douglas City Museum. Brandon Howard and George Gress will talk distilling and guitar making. And Cynthia McFeeters will update us on what's happening with the Juno Community Charter School. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more right here live and local on a Juno afternoon. It's currently a warm 46 degrees at the Juno International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Wisconsin tribes are laying out priorities before state lawmakers. The annual State of Tribes address is being delivered at the Wisconsin Capitol in Madison. Stockbridge Muncie Community President Shannon Holsey was invited to give this year's speech. The event is an opportunity for the state's 11 federally recognized tribes and legislators to work on relations. The speech highlights the current state of tribes and gives tribal leaders an opportunity to discuss legislative priorities. The State of Tribes address began in 2005. Educators and students at the University of Kansas recently explored how to support Native American students in higher education. The university hosted an academic scholar on campus to share her research. Rhonda Lavaldo has more.
Citing Native American college numbers, Adrian King, Cherokee Nation member, spoke at the University of Kansas about the need to include Native Americans not only in campus environments, but in statistics that are gathered as well.
Your data is flawed if it doesn't include Native students, and people get caught up in a lot of times of pool being too small or there not being enough data, but we're operating from such a lack of anything that people say, like, oh, we only have 600 Native students in our pool. For the world of Native research, 600 students is huge. So being able to adjust their lens and kind of expectations on what constitutes a full pool of data, I think is really important.
For those looking at colleges, Natasha Myhill, KU graduate student, says applicants should look to see what cultural support programs they offer.
I did a program called Gateway, and it took a lot of different cultural groups from cultural backgrounds, first-time college students, and it was kind of like a pre-college experience in the summer where we took classes, got to know the campus, and then were really, I felt like I was more well-adjusted to starting off as an undergrad.
Keene also discussed ideas on how to make the college experience better for Native Americans that equate to a higher graduation rate. This is Rhonda Lavaldo for National Native News.
Bronson Koenig received the 2017 United States Basketball Writers Association's Most Courageous Award on Monday. It was presented to the senior Wisconsin men's basketball player at a luncheon during college basketball championships in Phoenix, Arizona. Koenig, whose Ho-Chunk was recognized for being a role model and spokesperson in the Native American community. He was also acknowledged for his advocacy for the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe and its fight against the Dakota Access Pipeline. In his speech streamed online, Koenig said he was accepting the award not for himself but for all Native Americans, adding he gets his courage by seeing what they go through on a daily basis. Koenig says he used his platform and social media to highlight the No Dakota Access Pipeline fight. The annual Most Courageous Award recognizes a player, coach, official, or administrator who demonstrates courage, reflecting honor on the sport of amateur basketball. The sister of a First Nation teen in Manitoba who became the face for the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada is now missing herself. The CBC reports Sarah Fontaine is missing. Her younger sister, Tina Fontaine, was reported missing and later found dead in a river in 2014. She was 15 years old at the time of her murder, which sparked public outcry and renewed calls for a national investigation into missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls. Sarah Fontaine has experienced several more tragedies in her life, according to her family, with the loss of her father and cousin in recent years. Police say Sarah was last seen Sunday in Winnipeg. Meanwhile, families of missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls are preparing for a national investigation, which is expected to formally begin in May. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
The Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce's Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the Gathering of Nations to Expo New Mexico, April 28th and 29th. Information on services and the Gathering of Nations at siabq.org.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 4th. Scott Burton, your host today. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. On the show now is Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch, and they are here to give us an update on the library. You two are busy a lot.
Yeah, that's how librarians are.
Well, it's interesting to me, too. Like, back in the day, I don't know that libraries did that, right? It was a place for books. But now they're becoming community centers. Have they always been like that? I don't know.
Libraries have always put on different programs. What those were or how they worked depended on different communities. But
certainly a focal point for a community, for the community. I think libraries have always been that.
Yeah. Excellent. So what's going on here in town?
We've got another full slate of programming for the month of April, and Anne's going to kick us off, talk about some English classes.
Sure. So one of the programs that we're offering is we are working with the Learning Connection to provide English classes or ESL classes to the public. They are free. So if English isn't your first language and you would like to get better at it, or if you know somebody who would really benefit, every Wednesday night for the next 6 to 7 weeks, we will have English classes, 5:30 at the Valley Library. You can come to all of them. You can come to one of them. Everything is free. Books are provided. There's an instructor provided. And it's a really great time.
That's great. And the Learning Connection, that's CIRC, they're affiliated, right?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Wednesday nights, the Mendenhall Library?
Yep.
Also, on the first Wednesday of every month, we've been holding our Lego Club, and it's a great opportunity for kids and their family members to come and just build together. Ty Keltner has been coming and giving us a Lego challenge every month, and we're really sad because Ty and his family are leaving Juneau and moving away. I've let the cat out of the bag. And so we're going to have our big last Lego night club with Ty tomorrow night, Wednesday the 4th, or 5th, sorry, out at the Valley Library at 5:30. So come bid him a fond farewell and build some cool stuff, and we'll think about the future of the Lego Club if there's anybody that wants to step up and start kind of helping with that. And then we're going to move into some book clubs we've got later on in the month.
So next Tuesday, on the 11th, we are having a book club. The series is called Pushing the Limits. It's grant-funded by the National Science Foundation. And so the book that we're reading this month is When the Killing's Done by T.C. Boyle. And it is this it's a book about a real event that took place in Southern California, and it's kind of what's going on with the Park Service, who's trying to restore an island to its natural habitat, and what's going on with animal activists who are really upset that the Park Service is killing off rats and pigs and other species that are on the island. So that's what the book is about. And we will have a guest, Stephanie Sell, who is the Juneau Area Management Biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And so she is going to be at the book club just to provide information, and we're going to have a lot of hands-on materials about what nature is and different things. And so it's going to be a really great book talk. You can get the book or the downloadable ebook or the book on CD or a downloadable audiobook through the library, and you have a week to read it, and then you can come and show up and have some snacks and talk about it.
Yeah, remind us the date of this talk.
That is going to be next Tuesday, the 11th. It's at the Douglas Library at 5:30 p.m.
And what's the title again?
The title is When the Killing's Done by T.C. Boyle. We have them on display at each library, so if you go to the library, you can say, where's the book club book? And it'll be right out in the front.
Sounds great.
Yeah, and that's one of the really great things about the library is we get to partner with so many great different agencies, and we've been really focusing on certain STEM, science, technology, engineering, math kinds of educational things. And so another coordination collaboration with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game has been a citizen science project that we've helped with, and it's a bat monitoring program where you come into the library, check out the little bat monitoring thing, and you get to drive your car and put the microphone on and record the sounds of bats. And it's been a really great project the last couple of years. So they're going to give a presentation on Wednesday, April 12th, out at the Valley Library on the basically the findings in some of the surveys during this past year, a little bit about the white nose syndrome, that's that fatal disease that affects bats, was found in Washington State recently, and basically what's our bat population and how they're doing here. So we'll have biologists from ADF&G to talk about that on the 12th out at the Valley. And after that, we've got more going on this month, board games.
Right. So on Saturday the 15th, we're having Board Game Day out at the Valley Library. It's going to go from 11 to 5 p.m., and there are board games of every kind and for every age. So you can play really complex, in-depth board games that take you 5 or 6 hours, or you can, like, stack animal pieces, and the person who drops an animal is the first one to lose. So it's all sorts and for all ages.
What are a few examples of popular board games these days?
I would say one of the most popular would be Settlers of Catan. It kind of came into popularity maybe 10 years ago. And so it is a game that is tile-based, and each tile produces a resource. So you are trying to, like, build the best settlement and get the most resources. So that's a really popular one. One of my favorites is called Forbidden Desert, and it is a cooperative game. So you have cooperatively crashed an airship, and you need to run around this desert and try and find all the pieces again and rebuild it. But the desert is, like, covering you up, and it gets sunny, and you get dehydrated. And so you are, like, working together to solve this.
Remind us when Board Game Day is?
That is Saturday, the 15th of April, and it is at the Valley. It starts at 11, and you can start your last game at 5 p.m. So.
Right, and then we have our monthly Downtown Family Night on Thursday, April 20th at 5:30, where we gather together and do fun things, have a guest usually, and snacks and great stuff like that. And then for the rest of the month, we've got some really cool things happening starting on the 21st, and we're going to be having a Science on Screen presentation. We're also rolling a lot of that into the comic convention with Alaska Robotics. So we're pretty excited. We'll kick off the Alaska Robotics Mini-Con convention at the Valley Library on the 21st at 6 p.m. Before that, you can watch our Science on Screen film, which is Jason and the Argonauts, and we're kind of highlighting films that have a lot of that stop-motion action in it because that was made famous by Ray Harryhausen. And one of the people coming up for the Alaska Comic Convention, Georgina Haynes, she's going to give a talk about that kind of stop-motion action, and she works with Leica Studios and puppetry fabrication. And so we're really excited to have another great Science on Screen scheduled. She'll be talking at the library on Saturday the 22nd at 3 o'clock, and there'll be movies at the Gold Town. There'll be all kinds of things going on at the Jack. We're going to come on later on in the month and talk a little bit more about that. But just to give everybody a heads up, there's more Science on the Screen and more about Comic Convention coming up.
Busy as usual.
Busy as usual. Yeah. And we want to wish everybody a happy Folk Festival this week. We've got a great display of books on folky things down at the Downtown Library, different biographies and books that have music and lyrics in it, kids' items, CDs, DVDs, and
probably not a jam spot, though.
We are a jam
it
spot.
It is?
Yeah, totally.
Wow. See, this is the new library.
It's the new library.
Come down and play music.
Yeah, so come down. We've scheduled the large meeting room at the Downtown Library as a jam spot on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 5. We're also going to have a kids' special story time on Saturday. Maybe there'll be a guest artist there. Or not the guest artist, but just, you know, someone who plays music there. And we're excited for Folk Fest this week as well.
To get a reminder of all these dates, is it best to go to Facebook or your website?
Either one. Facebook, we kind of highlight things as they come up. But if you go to our website, you can look at our calendar,
click on the featured events, you'll see the things that are sponsored by the library and filter out all that other stuff that people schedule that's really important but may not be of interest to you. So you can check it out in either place.
Beth Weigel, Program Coordinator of the Juneau Public Libraries, and Andy Hirsch, she's Electronic Services and Community Outreach. Thank you both for coming on the show. Anything else you want to add?
Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Anytime.
Drawn to that sort of library magic, whispering through the dusty aisle, watching all the thinkers read, trying to keep a grown man quiet. Like pulling teeth on a winter's eve, cracks and falls in unfamiliar roads, I'm on this one to find out. As you guess and brothers arrest, can't stay up in the cloud of ice, listening to my every move, just trying to survive. Self-imposed adventure is that selfishness drive. I can barely keep my head above the blue, trying to keep it off me and you. But I can see the sunshine's rays gleaming through the clear water, telling me God, I've been for this chapter's rest. There will always be better days. There will always be better days. Making music is what we do, trying to weave the patterns for me and you, trying to make the grasses breathe and a grown man cry. Breathing life is where I gleam, tangled up in a funnel's wind, trying to come out walking. Understand it's beyond me talking, trying to come out walking. Understand it's beyond me talking. I can see the sunshine's rays gleaming through the clear water, telling me that I've been for this chapter to write. There will always be better days. There will always be better days. Being alone is lonely, sought after like a holiday. Being home is my vacation, postcard dreams of a full-size bed. With the band once too many times, tears enough to get a ride. Still up in the next morning for another drive. That's the promise, the best advice we ever received is for you and me to stay together. It's easy to begin and hard to end. I'm just glad to go through it all with you as a friend. I can see the sunshine ray gleaming through. Telling me you got a hopping for this chapter's right. There will always be better days. There will always be better days. There will always be better days.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services in the Jordan Creek Center. Northern Audiology offers diagnostic medical hearing expertise and digital technology hearing instruments. 789-6780.
Friends of the Alaska State Libraries, Archives, and Museum presents Behind the Scenes, a fundraising gala on April 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the State Library, Archives, and Museum, Andrew P. Keshavarov Building. This event gives you an exclusive look behind the scenes at the APK. Explore the off-limits spaces, see a paper conservatory in action, get an up-close look at Alaska's hidden treasures, and hear what's happening in the state's greatest space. Live music from Tom Loker, appetizers, and a no-host bar. Tickets available at Hearthside Books, the Jack, and JAHC.org.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 4th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes after the hour. My next guests are here to talk about hospice and home care and the fun run coming up this Saturday, April 8th. I have Joni Pico. She is the bereavement and volunteer coordinator. Is that right, Joni?
Yes. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah, for hospice and home care. And also Nathan Lovick. He works for Catholic Community Services as the Fund and Development Coordinator. Welcome to the show, Nathan.
Thank you for having me.
So we were just talking before the show, hospice and home care is a division of Catholic Community Services. Nathan, I think a lot of our listeners probably know, but tell us a little bit about Catholic Community Services, if you will.
So Catholic Community Service really has three divisions. There's Southeast Senior Services. A lot of the services are throughout all of Southeast Alaska. People might be familiar with, like, the Juneau Senior Center. There's Caravan in Town and Meals on Wheels. There's also Children and Family Services. And then we also have Hospice and Home Care of Juneau here, which is very specific to Juneau.
Okay. Joni, tell us a little bit about Hospice and Home Care. You're a bereavement coordinator. What keeps you busy?
Well, we're kept busy providing a range of services, but I would like to make it very clear that we help people who are referred to us for care and support by their physicians. We need a physician referral. And we provide nursing services and speech and occupational and physical therapy. We have social workers. We have CNA services. As a bereavement coordinator, what I do is support people who are coming to terms with the need to heal after a loss or as a loss is coming up. We follow people who have lost a loved one for 13 months following the death. We have some support groups. We provide individual counseling. I would like to be very specific and let the community know that you do not have to be affiliated with Hospice and Home Care of Juneau or Catholic Community Service to access our services. We are we have an open door policy to the entire community.
And I think a lot of people associate hospice with end of life. Is that mostly what you do, is working with people as they near the end of their lives?
We have at Hospice and Home Care of Juneau, we have the hospice part, which is end-of-life care, and then we have home health, where we provide assistance to people for short-term with the likelihood that they will regain their health and just get on with things.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. About how many people would you say work for hospice and home care here in town? Or how many? I mean, there's volunteers involved?
We have volunteers. I'm trying to think. We would love to have more volunteers. Our staff, it's been growing a little bit. I think we might have about 10 people now. I'm not quite sure, so.
And speaking of new volunteers, what might a new volunteer be able to do or help with hospice and home care?
Volunteers, that's a really good question. Thank you. Volunteers can do various things. A lot of times people will come in and they'll wonder about whether or not they are really up to providing assistance to families or to people who are dying. And we have opportunities for people to do work like that. But we also have more administrative tasks. We can have people helping out in the office or help with mailings or help us out a little bit with fundraising with Nathan. So if you want to help out and you don't want to work one-on-one, face-to-face, with someone who is at the end of life or with their family members, there's plenty that we can use support with.
Okay. We'll get the contact information for that before we're over
to. Thank you, Scott.
Yeah. Nathan, tell us about this fun run.
So this is an annual event, the 12th one, the Heart of Hospice Run. It is held this Saturday, coming up real soon, April 8th. The race itself will start at 9 a.m., and all proceeds from the race actually go to benefit Hospice and Home Care of Juneau. For those who are actually interested in running, we have actually several locations throughout the community that people can sign up. Just a few of them include Juneau Curves, Nugget Alaska Outfitters, and the Foggy Mountain Shop. This is also a Nugget Alaska Outfitter Cup race. So anyone who runs in those races, their points accumulate over the season, so people are tracking those.
Mm-hmm.
The race itself is anyone who pre-registers 18 and under is $15, 20 the day of. And for anyone 19 and older, 20 the day of, or 20 pre-registration and 25 the day of the race.
And it's at Twin Lakes, right?
Twin Lakes Shelter, yes. Registration should begin about 8:15 that morning. So if anyone's interested in just showing up, which a lot of people in June are last minute, they, you know, depends on the weather of the day. We understand that. But we'll be there set up waiting for anyone who'd like to participate. It's a very fun, family-oriented event. The entire course is handicap accessible, so we invite everyone to attend.
And the T-shirts and sweatshirts are really nice looking this year, too.
Okay. And, Nathan, thinking about sort of the fundraising paradigm for Catholic Community Services, where does this fit in? Is this one of your major fundraisers? How many do you do a year?
Hospice is unique. They have the most structured fundraisers. They've been doing this one 12 years. We also have the Whale Watch, which is a regular annual fundraiser coming up too. That's on June 3rd, Saturday, June 3rd, I believe. Tickets are available. We just haven't put up any flyers for that yet.
That's okay. Come back and let us know. Remind us about that.
I do. And then the Light of Life, which a lot of people are very familiar with as well.
We've also added in an annual gala.
The first actual fundraiser for CCS as a whole. A lot of these fundraisers, like the Whale Watch and this hospice run, are specific fundraisers for hospice and home care. So all the money that comes to it stays with hospice and home care.
Before the show, when I asked Joni how long she's been with hospice and home care, she said 1,000 years. Joni, what draws you to this kind of work?
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm not supposed to take long pauses on the radio and think. I've been a social worker in Juneau for a long time now, going on 30 years, and I've worked in medical social work, and you know that people are always going to encounter health problems in with their own life or with loved ones, and I think that kind of walking the road with people is a nice thing to do. You know, if you're going to be losing a loved one or you're facing your own passing away, it's good to have, to be treated with compassion. And if we can offer a little bit of that, you know, heartfelt compassion to others, I think that is really important to me.
If people want to get in contact with you to volunteer or to investigate services, what's the best way to do that?
The best thing to do is to look at our website, www.ccs.org, or to call Hospice and Home Care of Juneau at 463-6111.
And Nathan, if people want more information on the fun run, where's the best place to get that?
Best place is very similar, the website at ccsjuneau.org, or someone can give us a call at 463-6145.
The fun run is this Saturday. Registration, you say 8:15, 8:30?
If you want to show up the day of, otherwise there's several partner agencies that people can sign up around town, or they can go to our website as well.
And all funds go to hospice and home care.
I want to just say our website is an easy one to navigate. Sometimes we say websites and people say, but ours is a really nice one, and so it offers information about all of services at Catholic Community Service.
Joni Pico, Nathan Lovick, thanks for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
I want to thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Sprung from cages on high.
us for a free concert and live television recording with the Lost Lakers. Karen and Tim Foote sing Alaskana Americana duets inspired by 33 years of marriage and life in Fairbanks.
I do love you.
The one-hour concert is free on Saturday, April 8th at 5 p.m. at 360 in the K2 building. You are listening to a Juno Afternoon here on April 4th, 2017. Scott Burton, your host, right at the bottom of the hour. And now in the studio to talk about Juno Douglas City Museum goings-on, Kaya Henriksen. She's the public programs coordinator. And guest Kathy Connor, geology professor emeritus from UAS. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
All right, Kaya, what's going on at the museum?
Well, this Friday we are going to be open late for First Friday from 4:30 to 7. We don't have any opening exhibits this month, but we're continuing our 12 by 12 community art exhibit from last month, as well as an exhibit of photographs by John Hyde. And we have a new campaign button poll that's a lot of fun. It has buttons from local, state, and national campaigns from the last, I don't know how many years, 50 or plus years.
Fun.
So, and we just got some new exhibit cases in the last few weeks. So our curator has been working on starting to fill those up so people will notice some things have moved around and there's some new objects out on display. And that's going to get fleshed out through the rest of this month and into May.
Okay. You mentioned the 12 by 12 project. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So this is the 13th year the museum has had the 12 by 12 exhibit, and it's open to anyone in the community of any age. You just have to make a piece that's 12 inches by 12 inches or 12 by 12 by 12 if it's three-dimensional, and it has to fit the theme for that year. So this year's theme is ink.
And about how many entries did you get?
I believe that we had around 50 entries.
Fine.
So it's a pretty full show.
And seems very accessible. You say it's open to the whole community.
Yes. So we have work from all ages and spectrums, people who, you know, might have their own gallery show in the museum or other galleries in town, and then people who just like to do this show every year or had a creative idea on this year's theme. So it's a good variety of work.
And that's one of the things that's up in the museum right now, right?
That's right.
Okay. And Kathy Connor, how are you related to the Juno Douglas City Museum right now?
Well, this week, my relationship lies with the Saturday coffee. I'm going to call it the Coffee Clatch, but you have a better name for it.
Yeah, it's our Coffee and Collections
there you go.
Program. So Saturday from 10:30 to noon, and it's all about Mount Juno. So Kathy will be one of the presenters.
All right.
Yeah, so you have to know, you know, why is it here? What has it done for us lately? What have we done for it lately? I mean, national news off Mount Juno this week
with
the avalanches, so it's keeping us out there.
What are a few highlights?
Highlights. Well, we have our water system. If it wasn't for slidings and Gold Creek blockings and lake makings, we wouldn't have the well field up there for our drinking water supply, which is pretty essential. There's always the gold that brought everybody here. And there were people here before those other people came who were actually the gold was were the flounders in Gold Creek. So thinking about all the human interactions with the mountain and then why are we sitting here looking at this 3,000-foot mountain from sea level, that's kind of an interesting thing to think about.
What is the technical name for the range that we're in? Is it the coastal range?
We're in the coast range, yeah.
Yeah.
Or coast range batholith if you include the granites under the ice field.
And is it true that there are tectonic plate borders at the bottom of all of our waterways?
There's quite a few ancient ones, and the active one now is offshore of Sitka.
Wow.
But yeah, probably Gastineau Channel was an ancient one.
Wow. And you're going to be talking about all this stuff
gotta
on Saturday.
Pull it all together, right? Got 4 days.
And what time? Remind us the details of that, Kaya.
So that starts at 10:30, and it's from 10:30 to noon. And along with Kathy Connor, we'll also have Meryl Jensen from the Arboretum, and he'll be talking about birds and plants of the Alpine. And then Denise Carroll and Sandy Williams, who are involved in hiking in Juno, will talk about hiking Mount Juno and the ridge and share some photos and some details for folks who are interested in getting involved in hiking.
Sounds like a very sort of holistic presentation on Mount Juno. Yeah.
And it's tying into, we have an exhibit up about Mount Juneau right now of photographs and artwork and recreational equipment. So we have some pieces from the Juneau Icefield Research Project out.
Okay. There's a lot going on at the museum. Where can people get more info?
So you can get more information at our website, which is www.juneau.org/library/museum. And we are open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday, and it's free admission all the month of April, thanks to a donation by Robert and Michelle Storer. So it's a good time to come in and visit the museum, even if you can't make it to one of our programs. And we do also have, coming up next week on the 12th, a poetry reading by the Byrne Thompson Writing Group. And I believe Mary Lou Spartz is going to talk more about that when she's on later.
Excellent. Kaya and Kathy, thank you for coming on the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's it. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks
thank
a lot,
you both.
This is Bird Note. Nearly half of all the bird species in the U.S. and Canada depend on one amazing resource, the boreal forest.
I'm Dr. Jeff Wells. I'm the Science and Policy Director for the Boreal Songbird Initiative. The boreal forest is a northern forest. It's the area that stretches from the interior of Alaska across northern Canada all the way to Newfoundland.
And it's home for up to 3 billion nesting birds. If you imagine each bird represents 1 second in time, 3 billion is about 95 years. That's a lot of birds.
The Pacific loon, black scoters, surf scoters, right-wing scoters, bufflehead, common golden eye.
In fact, many U.S. backyard birds were born and raised in the boreal. And about 1 billion migrants from the forest spend the winter in the U.S. But what's unique about the boreal forest is that it's still pretty much untouched.
It also has some of the largest wetlands left on Earth, the largest reserve of fresh water, some of the longest rivers that have never been dammed. The last large mammal migrations take place in the boreal forest. And so there's all these different biodiversity and conservation features that are still retained in the boreal forest. It's one of the last large, pristine ecosystems left on the planet.
For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on April 4th. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. My next guest is Mary Lou Spartz, and she is here to talk about poetry. Welcome to the show, Mary Lou.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
It's always a pleasure. So you're part of the poetry group, is that right?
Well, yes. We're just busted at the seams in this town with poets. You probably know about the slam. That's someone that attracts so many lovely, young, vital, terrific poet, and they just have a lot of fun, and they do great work. And then we have a little more mature group, let's say, that meets at the downtown library every 2 weeks on a Wednesday, from 5 to 7, and everyone who is, you know, if you've been writing poetry for decades and putting it away in the closet, you know, get it out, dust it off, and bring it down. We'd love to have you.
Is that tomorrow, Wednesday, do you meet, or will it be next week?
Wednesday, well, we're not meeting next week, because next week, the 12th, we're going to be at the museum, the City Museum.
Oh, that's right.
Celebrating Poetry Month, and we're going to be reading some of the work that we've been cooking during the winter. And maybe during more than one winter. And we'd love to have everybody just turn out.
About how many of you are there in this group?
Well, it varies, but usually it runs around 7, 8 to 10. It varies. People have their lives.
What's the best part about being in this group for you?
Say again?
What's the best part about being in the group for you?
For me?
Yeah.
Well, they're all very interesting people, and different points of view, different styles. They have different focuses. It's stimulating. That's, I guess, it's just a very stimulating, very pleasant experience. We're not in there to rip and tear and chew you up, you know. We like each other.
How would you describe your style?
Pretty plain. I think it's pretty plain. I'm very, I believe that I have come to the point where I think poems should say what they mean. I don't think obscurity is necessarily a good thing. After I read a poem and I get through it and I think, huh, so where did that go? So that I think I like to be straightforward. I find that that makes that's what I'm doing right now. I'm mostly short poems. I'm mostly I like to think of poems as connecting. So that's me, I guess.
Okay. If somebody wanted to join your group, what's the best way to do that?
Well, the best way to do it is just to show up, as Woody Allen said. You know?
Okay. And they could show up a week from tomorrow, mm-hmm. right? The 12th?
12th.
The Juno Douglas City Museum. What time?
We start at 7, and okay. we'll be through by 8:30. And I'm told there will be cookies.
All right. And that seems like that would be a great way to get familiar with your work as well.
Yes, do come. And we've invited our writer laureate, Ernestine Hayes.
Wow, cool.
And she's accepted our invitation. And we are so glad because we're so proud of her.
Yeah. Excellent. Mary Lou, I wish we had more time.
I do too.
But we'll see you a week from tomorrow, Wednesday the 12th, at the Juno Douglas City Museum. At what time again?
7 to 8:30.
All right.
So we'd like to get started as soon as possible, around 7, and we probably will... We'll probably wind it up at 8:30 because I think folks have to go home run the museum there.
Poet Mary Lou Sparks, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having us.
We got kids, we got dogs, busy lives, busy jobs.
To a Juno afternoon here on April 4th. Scott Bird and your host, about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. I have two founders on the show today. I have founder of Gress Guitars, Mr. George Gress. Welcome to the show, George.
Thank you. Good to be back.
It's nice to have you. And founder of the Amalgam Distillery, Brandon Howard. Welcome to the show, Brandon.
Hey, thanks, Scott. Good to see you.
Let's see. So, George, you are having an art show at the distillery this Friday, right?
I am, yes.
You're showing some of your guitars.
Showing the guitars.
That's very cool. Before we get to that, though, let's talk about the distillery, Brandon.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people are really curious about this beautiful space that's beginning to happen downtown. When did your first inspiration to build this happen?
You know, years and years ago, I had this this dream that was nagging at me. I really wanted to work in a single malt whiskey distillery in Scotland badly. And I would write letters, send emails, make phone calls, solicit constantly to these distilleries on island, Scotland. And this is an island of 3,000 people that has 9 huge distilleries, so Lochvullen and Laphroaig and Brocklady and several others. And, well, they only hire locals there. It drives the whole economy. And so I finally threw in the towel, and I remember emailing a lady at Brocklady and saying, well, since I'm never going to get a job there, I think I'll just start my own distillery. And
did she respond?
She did. She said, that is a brilliant idea. You absolutely should. And that was about almost 4 years ago. And so this has actually been in the planning for a little over 3 years. You know, there's a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of paperwork, a lot of learning to learn. I did a couple of apprenticeships at other distilleries. Ended up getting to work in my distillery over in Islay for a little while and did an apprenticeship over in Scotland to learn. And, yeah, we're really excited. We're really close.
If people haven't seen your location, how would you describe where you are?
We are right next door to Foggy Mountain Shop. We've got some of the best neighbors in town there. And right across the street from the Baranoff. So on the corner of Franklin and 2nd Street, where the Capital City Weekly used to be, and it's a beautiful space, absolutely beautiful. Paper's off the window, finally. I've been staring at brown paper for the last 5-6 months of my life, so it's nice to see the outside world again.
Okay. And opening probably within the month, you're thinking?
Oh, sometime in the next month. We're taking our time. Our still is currently getting plumbed in. They're wrapping that up. And then once we're in production, we want to take a minute to get used to the space, be comfortable. We want to make sure that when people come in, they have a great experience. And, you know, that's really important to us. But we'll be coming out the gates with gin and vodka, and then we'll be making whiskey, but that has to lay down for a couple years.
Okay. I want to talk more about the distillery, but I want you to come back before your official opening
and tell us
more about that when we have more time. It sounds really interesting. But in the meantime, on Friday, George, you'll be showing guitars down in this new space.
I will, yeah. What happened was that Brandon has some beautiful wood that he's been using as decor in the distillery, and he gave me a chunk of it, and I made a guitar out of it. And I called him and said, Brandon, I want you to have this guitar or display or whatever. And Brandon's, even with all the careful planning it takes for a distiller, he does things sometimes on the spur of the moment, when he just gets inspired. So he said, hey, let's do a show, which is perfect with me. So at that time I had, I think, 6 guitars ready, and now we're going to roll in with 11.
Okay, and for people that don't know you, long-time educator in Juneau, retire and become a guitar maker who uses Alaskan woods.
Yes.
To make your own guitars.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you're having a lot of fun, aren't you?
I'm having a blast with it, yeah. And, of course, one of the best things is the people that you meet, the people who, like Brandon, who give me pieces of wood and say, what can you do with this? So a lot of these guitars this time are either salvaged or donated wood. And it's a pretty big variety.
For our listeners who would like to know George better, we had a chance to do a profile, an artist profile on you, and you can go to our website at ktoo.org and just search for George Gress. And you'll see a video there of George in the shop and playing some of his guitars. Since that video, what's new? I know you're still having fun. You're probably still learning. What's new?
Wow. Since the interview.
Yeah.
I think since then I've built about 60 more guitars.
Wow.
And my grandchildren are growing up, so I get to spend a lot of time with them too. And so it's a busy life.
I bet. Yeah. I bet. Brandon, what do you appreciate most about his work?
Oh, you know, I think that there's this thread that runs through it. The reason we wanted him at the Craft Distillery is the craft of his work. These guitars are imaginative and impeccable and just gorgeous. You know, having something that is handmade is really special these days. You know, something that somebody has taken the time to create themselves. That just makes it for me. I love when people put that energy into things.
You can see the distillery. It's kind of like an open house in a sense, right?
It is like an open house.
And the guitars in one this Friday. What time are you going to open your doors?
I think like 4 o'clock. Is that when we usually do the first Friday thing around here?
Yeah, 4:30 till about 6:30, yeah.
And guitars will be for sale as well, won't they?
Yeah, about half of them are for sale.
Okay.
At locals only prices.
And I should note, we won't be serving, so just want to make sure that if anybody has that expectation, just open house showing George's beautiful, beautiful guitars.
Brandon Howard and George Grass, first Friday opening at Amalga Distillery. What are those crossroads there?
Franklin and 2nd Street.
Okay. And George Gress will be showing his guitars this Friday night. Thank you guys both for coming on the show.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you.
Who draws the crowd and plays so loud? Baby, it's the guitar man. Who's gonna steal the show? You know, baby, it's the guitar man. He can make you love. He can make you cry. He will bring you down and he'll get you high. Something keeps him going miles and miles a day to find another place. The guitar man. Who's on the radio? You go listen to the guitar man. Then you listen to the music and you like to sing along. You want to get the meaning out of each and every song. Then you find yourself a message and some words to call your own and take them home.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. We have a few minutes here left in the hour, and the Community Charter School is on the show now. We have Lindsay Hobart. She teaches 2-3 at the school. Elias Taylor, he's a third grader, and also Tom Schwartz, a fourth and fifth grade teacher at school. Welcome, you three.
Thanks for having us.
It's so nice to have
Thanks,
you.
Girl.
Community Charter School, where is it if people don't know?
It's between 4th and 5th Street on Gold, kind of in the middle of downtown.
Okay, and if you had to describe what kind of school it was, how would you do that?
It's a very family-oriented school, so we have a board that's made up of parents. We have a lot of influence from the parents about what goes on, and then there's a lot of constructivism that goes on where the kids are building on their own knowledge.
And is it Montessori-based? No.
It's not.
It's another alternative program, Montessori being one of the other ones, and Yakus.
Okay, so it's just considered alternative education?
It's an optional school within the district, yeah.
Okay. And so I understand, among other activities, you have a First Friday show that's coming up. Who would like to talk about that? Elias?
So, yes, we have the First Friday art show where, as far as I know, my 2-3 class will be telling people about the maps that we made, and we used a Turkish map fold so that when you open the things like a book, the map opens up to full size. And my map, it was based off a story that I wrote, and I wanted to make a map of the battlefield. Okay. For those who have read the story.
And tell us a little bit about your story. What's it about?
So my story, it is a fiction story, and I wanted to make something kind of about the spirits. And so the story is about this kingdom of sky spirits versus the undead spirits. And what I'm working on right now in the book is the sky spirits are fighting the undead spirits' leader, which is this giant earthen monster.
Sounds like there's a lot there. And then there's the art project to go with the writing.
Uh-huh.
Very cool. And so people can come see that at the school this Friday?
Yeah, correct. 4:30 to 6, and we'll have art in all of the classrooms from all of the kids. So all the classes have been working on choosing different types of art to display and show to the community.
Well, we only have 20 seconds left, Tom.
I just want to add to the art show that we're going to have music performances by our middle school bands. So Rob Cohen is our band instructor. He's doing 4th and 5th grade guitar. So we're going to have a couple music performances, and then the art in the halls and food. So it's very much a First Friday gallery walk.
Sounds like a lot of fun.
Good chance to visit the school and see what it's like there.
Lindsay Holbert, Elias Taylor, Tom Schwartz, thank you all for coming in. First Friday at the Juneau Community Charter School is the place to be. Thanks, you three.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
When I was young and tender, I left my native home. And over to old Scotland, I started to roam. As I walked down through Bishopstown, seeking for employ.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon. Currently 52 degrees in the capital city. The forecast for tonight calls for rain, mainly after 7 p.m. Tomorrow, rain before 1 p.m., then showers after 1. Thanks a lot.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auckland.